Well, first to New Zealand, and don't laugh. The three-term centre-right national government may not win Saturday's election. Now, if you made that prediction a couple of months ago, I'd want to know, what were you smoking? After all, the polls, the press, the betting markets, why, the very scent in the air, they all insisted that the Conservative Prime Minister, Bill English, would win a landslide. Even the Labor opposition had succumbed to this sense of inevitability. But they might all be wrong. The Labor opposition has come up with little that's new in terms of policy, whereas the National Party, well, that's delivered budget surpluses, consistent 3% economic growth, 4.8% unemployment rate. Yet such is the magic of politics, the new Labor leader, Jacinda Ardern, she's the charismatic 37-year-old former DJ, she's risen in the polls to the point where she could win power. How bizarre. What on earth is happening across the Tasman? Well, for answers, let's turn to two leading experts on New Zealand politics and public policy. Oliver Hartwich is Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative, the leading Kiwi think tank, and Carl Dufresne is a columnist, blogger, and former newspaper editor. Oliver, Carl, welcome back to Between the Lines.
Hi, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
Now, Oliver, how do you account for the dramatically changed political climate in New Zealand?
Well, first of all, we have to say it's been one of the longest election campaigns I can remember. Bill English announced on the 1st of February that we would go to the polls on the 23rd of September. And basically, ever since, we've been in election mode. We've had an election budget. We had a very long drawn-out election campaign. And at some stage, about 7 weeks ago, the Labour Party panicked because they were on 20, 21, 22% in the polls. And that's when Andrew Little, the then Labour leader, decided that he could no longer lead the Labour Party into the election, and basically made room for his deputy. And Jacinda Ardern is a very charismatic figure, as you explained, and she is very popular. She has 70,000 followers on Twitter. So she took over, but nobody really expected much. People thought she might probably give the Labour Party a bit of a boost in the polls, but now she's competitive, and now there is even a chance that she might eventually take over.
And you've argued, Oliver, that she's, Jacinda here, is eerily similar to Kevin from Brisbane 10 years ago.
Yes, in some ways she is. And I mean, you could probably draw other parallels as well with Tony Blair in Britain, or maybe even with Macron in France. She basically tries to campaign on two things at once. On the one hand, she promises not to rock the boat too much. So even Labour in New Zealand commits itself to keeping the budget in surplus and to paying down debt. So she's trying to actually appear like a fiscal conservative, in Kevin Rudd's words. At the same time, she promises to be something new and fresh. So like Kevin from Queensland, we have Jacinda from Hamilton promising not too much change, but just enough to be exciting and to get people to vote for her.
Yeah, but changing leaders so close to an election, it's a huge risk. And history suggests that changing leaders when an election is imminent is suicidal. Now, I know it worked for the ALP here in 1983 when Bob Hawke replaced Bill Hayden on the eve of the 83 poll. But Hawkey was, you know, is a well-known, experienced commodity. Jacinda Ardern is not. She's pretty inexperienced. Carl, how do you explain her success?
It's very hard to put your finger on exactly why she's risen the way she has. It's really a bit of a phenomenon. But if you look at the historical context here, Tom, we have a pattern going back probably 70 years in New Zealand of electing centre-right, that is National Party governments, for three terms on the trot. And generally what happens is that over the course of those three terms, they gradually run out of puff and the electorate tires of them, gets bored with them, sees them as being a bit complacent, perhaps asleep at the wheel. They decide that we need a new Labour government, which normally comes in a sort of fit of reformist zeal, often crashes and burns spectacularly, but that's another story. And I think that we're seeing that pattern unfolding again. Now, the interesting thing is that it didn't look like it was going to happen a few weeks ago. And the change factor, and you put your finger on it yourself, is the election or the emergence of Jacinda Ardern as the new leader of the Labour Party. That's the crucial thing that has changed. And she has captured the public's imagination in a way that her predecessor, Andrew Little, who was a worthy but rather dour, stolid sort of guy, very similar to Bill English on the other side, he wasn't able to kind of motivate and excite the public the way she seems to have. And so that's really the crucial thing. Nothing else has changed.
So you're saying then that history is on her side. It's against National.
And yes, indeed.
And you've made the point that Matthew Hooton, who's kind of like the Andrew Bolt or Tim Blair of New Zealand media, when someone like Matthew Hooton attacks National for being lazy and complacent, you know it's in trouble.
Yes, you do. And I've increasingly developed the sense over the past few weeks that the tide is suddenly going out for this National government, not due to any kind of incompetence. They've been extremely competent economic managers, particularly Bill English himself. They've got an extraordinarily successful record in many respects. But ultimately, election decisions often come down to strange kind of unfathomable, emotive, and you could even say illogical factors. And, you know, I think the electorate has just decided, as electorates do, that it's time to give the other guys a shot.
Yeah.
And Jacinda Ardern has made the Labor Party suddenly look a lot more attractive and friendly.
One of my great laments, guys, is that here in Australia, you need very good peripheral vision to see New Zealand politics on the world map. But it did get a lot of attention here recently over this issue about a New Zealand MP helping to establish that Barnaby Joyce was a New Zealand citizen. Oliver, how do you think that Ardern handled her Labor MP over his involvement in this domestic political issue over here?
Well, I think she handled it extremely well, because she basically said that it is not the function of the New Zealand Labour Party to interfere in Australian domestic affairs, and called her MP Chris Hipkins back on that. And in doing so, I think she established leadership and she showed her strength quite clearly. I think she also benefited, of course, from Judy Bishop's intervention in Australia, because that basically just helped her to position herself. So in a way, she had to thank her own rogue MP, Chris Hipkins, and Judy Bishop for the help in actually establishing her election campaign and establishing her leadership credentials.
And let's just recap here. Julie Bishop said she couldn't trust a New Zealand Labour government. Carl, is that your sense that the controversy has done the Labour leader in New Zealand no harm at all?
Absolutely not. I think I agree with Oliver. I think she handled it very deftly for an inexperienced politician. She didn't get rattled. She pulled her mischievous MP, and it was mischievous. She pulled him into line, but she refused to be cowed by Julie Bishop's huffing and puffing, which is what it was. I think she handled it entirely in the correct way.
We're talking about New Zealand's election on Saturday. My guests are Oliver Hartwich from the New Zealand Initiative and Carl Dufresne, a columnist and former newspaper editor, also in NZ. Gentlemen, one big issue on the New Zealand campaign has been immigration. Now, Labor, a bit like Tony Abbott here, they say that cutting immigration is essential for citizens' quality of life because you reduce demand for the overheated property market. I recently asked the former New Zealand Prime Minister John Key about his nation's housing crisis, and this is what he told me.
What I would say is, A, Auckland's housing market has now stabilised, and B, you've got more construction taking place in New Zealand than you've had in the history of New Zealand before in terms of houses. So, yep, house prices have gone up. That is a genuine issue, and it's a genuine issue for particularly young people trying to get in the market. But you've got to remember, with very low interest rates, for a lot of people, their average mortgage costs went down dramatically, even though they were having to borrow more.
That's a former Prime Minister, Sir John Key, with me on RN Sunday Extra recently. Oliver.
Well, I think John Key was conveniently glossing over a few facts there. The problem is actually homemade. The problem is that we haven't built enough homes in this country basically for 20 or 30 years. And the problem has deteriorated over the last 9 years, definitely, because we are seeing record migration levels currently. New Zealand receives about 72,000 net migrants a year, which doesn't sound much if you're in Australia. But of course, we're a small country of not even 5 million people. So 72,000 net migration is a massive influx of people. And then the country, of course, has to build homes for these people, and unfortunately we're not doing this. And I think the national government has to take some responsibility for that, because they haven't reformed the planning laws. They haven't made it easier until very recently for councils to provide infrastructure for new development. And now we're having a debate where migrants are blamed for the housing crisis, where migrants are blamed for Auckland congestion problems. The thing is, actually, we only have ourselves to blame, because we should have tackled these issues. Cutting back migration, of course, is a populist response to all of this. And that actually remains Labour's secret to tell us how we're going to build the homes when we're actually in a shortage of builders and construction people. So we actually need these migrants to build the homes that we should have built ages ago.
Yes, well, Labour will say there's clogged roads, violence against ethnic groups, But the high property prices is really what's creating a lot of angst in New Zealand. Carl, is Labor in New Zealand on a political winner here?
I certainly think that if the national government is vulnerable on any particular issue, it's certainly housing. Oliver's absolutely right in everything he says. I mean, it's not just housing, it's infrastructure generally. You know, the immigration has put pressure on roading, it's put pressure on schools and hospitals across the board. And I think, you know, the government, the National Party, has been asleep at the wheel to a certain extent here. And they're trying to play catch-up, but they've just left it a little bit too late. Now, you know, whether Labor is going to kind of pull a rabbit out of the hat and fix things is another matter entirely, because their policies for dealing with these issues haven't really been terribly clearly articulated. So, you know, we're kind of going into this election slightly blind in terms of Labor. We don't quite know what we're getting, but I've got a feeling that ultimately that's not going to matter, because people have just decided, this is my feeling and I could be proved horribly wrong, that people have decided that they just, it's time, it's a classic thing, it's time for a change.
Yeah, well, finally, governing New Zealand is awfully complicated because of this proportional voting system. That means parties must form coalitions to get a majority of seats. Carl, is it likely that Winston Peters, he's a so-called new, sort of the populist of New Zealand, the Pauline Hanson of New Zealand, if you like, is it possible that he will end up in the driver's seat again?
Well, that's what people have been saying. That's kind of the conventional political wisdom, and has been all right up until the last couple of weeks. But I sense a change in the national mood. I think people are finally tired of Winston Peters and all his bluster and bluff. And I'm hoping that this election might be Winston Peters' swan song. Again, I'm prepared to be proved wrong, but I think he made a strategic error, an important strategic error, only a week or so ago, when he decided he wasn't going to appear in a television debate with the other minor parties. Obviously, he felt this was beneath his dignity. He didn't feel any obligation to go before the country and articulate his policies. Mm. I think that was an act of colossal arrogance. Maybe a little bit of fear there too for being exposed. Who knows? But I think that's going to count against him.
And we should stress that Winston Peters stands for anti-immigration, anti-free trade, anti-foreign investment. Oliver, just say that Peters is the kingmaker in a new New Zealand government, whether it be National or Labor. To what extent would that agenda damage New Zealand in coming years?
Well, it would obviously damage New Zealand, because we are a country dependent on trading with the rest of the world. I agree with Carl. I think the mood in the public is slowly turning against Winston, because I think the country's probably had enough of him. Mm. If he actually enters the government, we probably shouldn't be too afraid anyway, because what Winston says in opposition and what he does in government are two completely different and unrelated things. But I would like to leave you with just one thought. Because it is not an inevitable conclusion of this election that there might be a Winston Peters or a small Green Party as a minor coalition partner. The current election actually reminds me very much of what Germany went through in 2005, another country operating under the same electoral system, mixed member proportional. And in 2005, Angela Merkel decided to actually take the Social Democrats, so Labour Party basically, into a grand coalition, and that worked really well. That actually steered Germany through the global financial crisis. It was a stable government in very difficult and challenging times. Sometimes I think New Zealand should probably try something similar, even though, of course, everybody in New Zealand will say this will never happen, this is completely impossible. But these were exactly the same arguments brought forward in Germany 2005, and it worked.
We'll have more to say about Germany coming up. Oliver, Carl, thanks so much for being on Between the Lines today.
Thank you.
Oliver Hartwich is Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative. That's the leading Kiwi think tank. And Carl Dufresne is the columnist and former editor of the Dominion in Wellington.